Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio.
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm a guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm working for the state. I'm a highway patrol.
Good evening and welcome to Audio Road. I'm your host, retired transport officer Dale Howard. For those of you who are new to the podcast, I retired out of a 23-year law enforcement career, the last 7 years of which were spent in commercial vehicle enforcement. I was a hazmat inspector, a CVSA instructor, Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance. I've done well over 1,000 CVSA inspections. I've held my CDL for 34 years now. I retired, too honest to steal, too lazy for a paper route, so I bought a truck, and I'm an owner-operator. I'm leased to a major carrier and haul refrigerated freight through Canada and the U.S. So I'd like to welcome you into the program, and thanks for spending an hour with me this evening. Lisa's got the night off, so I'm screening calls as well as hosting calls. So if you want to dive in and join the conversation, just push one on your phone, and what I'll do is I'll give you the last four digits of your phone number and let you know that you're live on the air. Had a great day today. Managed to meet up with Kevin and Lisa and have breakfast with them this morning in Las Vegas. Always so nice to spend some quality one-on-one time and get to bend Kevin's ear in person. Great, great people, and have done so much for our industry. And I'd like to just put this out to everybody. You know, let's not be afraid to send Sirius and XM an email telling them how much we love the program and you know, what it's doing for our industry. Quality programming, great show, great people. And as an industry, we tend to get complacent and ask somebody else will do it. But sure doesn't hurt to keep reminding Sirius and XM that we sure enjoy listening to them. Tonight's theme, I thought we'd touch on hazmat freight with CSA 2010 alive and well now. It's shippers are going to be taking a little closer look at carriers, and for those of us who are on our own authority, you can use this to your advantage and start marketing yourself if you've got a good clean record. And hazmat freight, I think, with a good record, you can demand a little higher rate and make a little bit. Better return on it. Certainly something to, you know, not to be feared. Can just pay attention to the little details, and, you know, it's relatively easy freight to haul. For those of you who are listening online, and you want to jump into the show, give us a call at 347-884-8327. And like I say, for anybody hanging on, you want to jump into the discussion, push 1, and let's go to 4435. And good evening, you're live on the show. You're live on the show. Going once. Okay, let's go to 5769. And good evening, you're live on the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call here. My question here about your hazmat is I've been contemplating getting my hazmat. I haul for largest intermodal hauler out of Phoenix, and we haul everything out of the Port of Long Beach. But I guess my concern is that with these containers, when we pick them up from the harbor, they're sealed. Do I have any rights to open that container? How do I know my load is secure and that it's not going to roll around or spill or anything else?
Excellent, excellent question. What, I guess first off, what's your carrier's policy on opening those containers?
We don't open anything until the customer, you know, says to. The one time that I did open it was because it was live animals, with live cows.
Okay.
You know, that was just to feed them. But, you know, other than that, we don't open anything, but I've heard some drivers complain about load shifting, stuff rolling around in the hazmat loads. So I just didn't know, you know, with picking up an unsecured load, you know,
yeah.
I should say a sealed load that came from overseas, you know, they
Excellent.
Seem to cut every corner they can.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And what I do is because we pick up sealed trailers all the time because we do a lot of drop and hook. And, if I'm not sure, then I'm on the phone to dispatch. Listen, can I break the seal and have a look? And 9 times out of 10, you know, they'll give you the go-ahead for that. Especially with hazmat because it's, my carrier just got spanked with somewhat on CSA 2010 for hazmat violations, and that's what it is. It's, guys not putting load bars in behind hazmat loads. So I think, to CYA, it's worth, at least make the call to dispatch, can I open this thing up and check to see how it's secured, and if it's not secured, properly secure it.
Well, I guess what I'm dealing with, though, is most of our containers are what's called in bond. So we've got to go down to Nogales or to a off-site location that could be several hundred miles away to get that bond canceled. So I don't think they're going to let me chop that seal.
You cannot open a bonded trailer. And
So if that starts to leak or that starts to spill, am I responsible then, or is the company responsible?
Well,
or is that bond? How does that work?
That's a real good question. If you wind up with a leak, somebody's going to have to open that container and deal with it.
Right.
The nice part about that, if it is leaking and somebody is dealing with it, law enforcement and the fire department's going to be involved, so they're going to be the ones breaking the seal.
But there's no preventative action that I can do to keep that from happening, given that it's a bonded...
Nope.
I'm not responsible. If it does start to leak, though, they can't hold me responsible or my company responsible then, can they?
Well...
Because we didn't load it, and we didn't, I guess it came from,
I would like to think that somebody wouldn't hold you responsible. And you know what? When I was on the job, I certainly wouldn't have. But having said that, somebody somewhere,
has to be responsible.
Yeah, but it's your hands are tied. Really, there's nothing you can do if. If there is an issue inside that container, because you cannot break that seal. And, technically, when I was on the job, I couldn't break a custom seal. I had to have a federal officer present, and he had to be the one to cut the seal, because I didn't have the authority to cut a bond seal.
So the only thing I can do is, before I leave the harbor, go by the port, not the port police, but U.S. Customs, and have them cut it and then reseal
yep.
it.
Yep, that's that's certainly an avenue, because they can they're the ones that sealed the trailer, and yeah they can if you can find an agent that'll cut that for you and allow you to properly secure it, that's the way to go. But yeah, en route, the only person that can break that technically is a customs officer or a federal officer.
Okay. Or, and there's a TOT and whatever cannot cut those.
No, nope, absolutely not. And it's like I say, I was a CVSA instructor, and I hounded on that every year, every refresher. I got custom seals and passed those around to every class I taught, and that was the unpardonable sin. Thou shalt never cut one of those seals.
Okay.
And if you, like I say, if we wanted to go on a fishing trip, then you best get a federal officer over there and give him the bolt cutters.
Okay.
But, that brings up, an excellent point, because you pick that trailer up at the port and, drop it in your yard, somebody else hooks onto it. Yeah, that's kind of Pandora's box, isn't it?
Yeah, and I guess the question was, if you know about these bonded containers, when I haul them from the port and bring them to our yard and drop them, do bonded containers need to be in a separate area that are locked up from the rest of the containers, the rest of the trailers?
No, they as long as they're the seal integrity is what is really what they're looking for.
Okay.
So they as long as they have to remain sealed in transit.
Okay.
And Lord help you if that seal gets broken in between time.
Yeah, I think that's what happened to one of our fellow carriers in there. I saw one of them in their yard. They had a separate place, a separate little cage that they had room for five containers, and that's what they had going on. I guess they had one busted, and so they nipped that by creating their own special area for it. So I just didn't know, as our yard is sometimes unsecured, so depending on what yard you're dropping it in.
Yeah, no. They as long as the seal integrity isn't compromised, then they don't have to be anywhere. But yeah, like you say, some carriers do have a special spot in the yard just so mistakes don't happen.
Okay.
One
All right,
thing
good
you
deal.
Really
Thank you, sir.
To be, hey, no problem. Before I let you go, one thing you really have to be careful of picking up containers is paperwork.
Well, we don't get any from the terminal where I pick up. Some of the terminals down there, the Port of Long Beach, don't give you an in-gate or an out-gate for the container at all. So what do? Do I just make up my own handbill rating?
Yeah, you need, if it's a hazmat load, then, you have to have documentation saying what's in
okay.
that trailer.
Yeah, with the hazmat, we definitely have that for our hazmat, but our regular containers, with a regular container without a hazmat, do you need documentation as your...
Yeah, you just write up a dummy bill of lading, one container,
okay.
Said to contain
from point
whatever.
To point.
Yeah, from point A to point B, the can number, but hazmat freight, you have to have documentation as to what's in that trailer, and if you're hauling the same, the same class of material, like if it's a flammable liquid, for example. I would make sure you always have an extra supply of placards with you.
Okay.
And, again, all I do is I just throw them under my mattress. They're flat, they're safe, they're dry, and always got a roll of duct tape handy. And, if you lose a placard, you can replace it, because that's the one thing with hazmat freight, you do not want to give enforcement any reason to stop you. If you can stay under the radar, so keep the placards clean, they're well displayed, they have to be on point, meaning that the triangle has to be, it has to look like a triangle. Some guys put them on so it looks like a square. That's incorrect, and that'll get you an inspection.
But as long as they're centered, center of the on either side, tent of the trailer, and then front to back. On the front and the back, they have to be similar to the trailer also, correct?
Yeah, well, as long as they're on the front, they have to be visible from front and back and side to side. But like I say, they have to be on point. They can't be turned so that they're square.
Right.
That's just begging for an inspection. And you would not believe the amount of placard holders I've seen that are mounted incorrectly. And, yeah, drivers wind up putting placards in them. And it's just a good excuse to pull them over and have a check. And like I've said all along, normally what I stopped you for isn't what you got the ticket for. So, yeah, the last thing you want to do is have a heart-to-heart with somebody on the side of the highway, so do your best to stay off the radar.
Good job. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for calling, and when we're done, if you don't mind just pushing one again, and that takes you off my queue, we are going to go to 1633. Oops. Big fingers, little keyboard. There we go, 1633. You are live on the show.
Hello. How are you tonight? I'm good.
Great, thank you.
This is Ken. Traveling across Illinois. Compliance type of question here. I had, it's been a while ago, but I was talking to a teen couple.
Yep.
And they were, you know, I got a look at their truck, and they had done something different in there. But this goes to... normally, if you're sitting in the passenger seat, you're supposed to log that as right now as on duty, not driving, correct?
Under the current laws, yes.
Okay. Well, what they had done, and I didn't even ask them, they didn't say anything about this for logging that, but had taken the cabinet out behind the passenger seat and put an RV chair in there. Now, does that constitute being in the sleeper berth?
Ooh.
You know, like, exactly where does the sleeper berth start in a truck?
Well, you know, that's...
I know it's splitting hairs.
Yeah, it really is. You know, technically, geez, you know, I'd have to read the regulation because there is a definition of a sleeper berth, but I would interpret it as behind, you know, anything behind the driver's seat.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what I would think. And technically, you're not in the passenger seat, but would that be considered a passenger seat?
Well, yeah, that doesn't get any grayer if you tried.
Well, I thought, you know, if anyone might have an answer, you might have an answer to that.
Boy, that's one of those maybes, and that's final.
That's what I kind of thought.
You know, that's, you know, is the seat facing forward or facing back?
It was facing sideways.
Facing sideways, ooh.
You know,
how much of the seat, how much of the seat is in the cab and how much of the seat is in the bunk?
Yeah. You know, you take a regular sleeper, you take out that cabinet that's behind the passenger seat, and that's where it fits.
You know, if the majority of the seat... is in the bunk, you know, I'd have to give you that as that's the bunk.
You know, I guess it's creative.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what?
You know.
It's shame on any officer that would, you know, make a big deal out of that, because personally I think we got bigger fish to fry than that.
True.
You know, there's creativity.
You know, and same thing with, you know, the bigger sleepers where they have the workstation and the table back, you know, in the back, you know, front bunk area. You know,
yep.
If someone's sitting back, you know, a co-driver's sitting back there, that should be considered, you know, off-duty.
Absolutely.
In the
bunk
area, you know.
Yeah, no, I would have no...
They just moved that seat a little forward.
Yeah, well, you know what, and that had to be the dumbest part of the hours of service rules I have ever seen in my life. To hold somebody a prisoner in that sleeper for 10 hours is just unbelievable.
It's
just inconscionable, actually. And, you know, I dealt a lot with teams, and to be quite honest, I hated dealing with teams. Because it's, you know, some poor guys in the back, some poor schmoes in the back trying to sleep, and, you know, you're trying to do a traffic stop, and, you know, I really felt bad for the guy in the back. So, yeah, I kind of avoided teams unless there was something real blatant. You know, unless there was something really blatant that,
right.
You know, I needed to have a talk with him. But, you know, for the sake of stopping a truck, you know, I kind of let him, I kind of gave him a free ride only because I always drove part-time when I was on the job, and I kind of had a different perspective of, you know, looking at things.
Well, the wife's oldest boy is, he's a deputy out in Kansas, and his attitude to truck drivers is, for the most part, if you're not going too fast and you're not driving stupid, you've got a job to do and I've got another one to do and I'm going to leave you alone.
You know what? And that's, you're absolutely right. I was cashing a check the same as everybody else. And I ran on the three strikes and you're out rule. If I can find, you know, I was in 100% patrol location. So I had to go out and look for my work. And if I could find three things wrong with you when I'm driving down the road at 60 miles an hour, we're going to talk, because obviously you're not paying attention to the little details. But otherwise, you know, I had better things to do. You know, I'm out there targeting drivers that shouldn't be on the road, that are a detriment to the entire industry. You know, not only the motoring public, but, you know, there is that segment of the industry that gives us a bad name. And those were the guys I was after. And, you know, somebody that looked compliant, yeah, I had better things to do, because I'm sure they had better things to do.
Yeah, so, you know, that's pretty much, you know, his attitude about dealing with big trucks going down the highway in Kansas. You know, it's pretty much, as long as you're not acting stupid, I leave you alone.
Well, and you're absolutely right. And thanks very much for jumping in. And, yeah, let's stay off the radar and don't give enforcement a reason to stop you. For anybody hanging on, if you want to jump in and join us on the conversation, the number is 347-884-8327, and push 1, and I'll get to your call. Let's go to 7441, and good evening. You're live on the show.
Good evening, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. I have two questions. First question. Are mud flaps required on a truck, the rear mud flaps?
On, is the truck hooked
to
a trailer? Or?
Yes.
Okay, are you, if you're hooked to a trailer, no, they're not. If you're bobtailing, yes, they are.
Okay, second question. It's a CSA 2010 question. Had six inspections, okay?
Yep.
Out of the six inspections, two of them were, I had logbook violations, and one of them was a logbook warning. My question is, did we determine that the score was based on a percentage of inspections? Could I volunteer for inspections to help change my percentage, or what are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Yes. They are based on a percentage of the inspections. So the more positive inspections you have, the better your score is going to look. If you have one inspection with one violation, then you're 100%.
Right.
Not in compliance. But if you've got four inspections and only one inspection with violations, then you're at 25%. So by all means, and I can't stress this enough, make sure that you do a really good pre-trip inspection on your truck and your trailer, and then the beginning of every quarter, hunt down and find yourself somebody that's doing level one CVSA inspections, and get a decal, get the truck passed, and that's going to accomplish two things. It's going to give you a positive inspection on your PSP as well as your carrier. It's going to give them a positive inspection on their score. If you're an owner-operator under your own authority, you get two bangs for your buck. And the next thing it's going to accomplish is once you've got a valid decal on the truck, unless there's a glaring violation, you get a free ride. So if they're doing inspections, you get waved right through. And that's,
right.
Nothing.
It seems like you would be punished. Like you said, if you had one inspection and you had one violation on that inspection, you're at 100%, as opposed to somebody like myself who gets pulled in a lock for some reason. And I've had 6 inspections and I've had 3 bad, I'm at 50%.
Yep. Okay. Now, not to pick on you, but why, how come you're getting inspected?
I have no idea. If I got caught up in, just a couple circumstances where, you know, they were spot inspection. One of them was a spot inspection. One of them, I was parked in a bad spot on a shoulder, and they were tagging people on the shoulder, you know.
Okay.
So it was just, I understand they were all my fault. You know, I was in violation of all that, but just circumstances.
Okay, yeah.
You know.
Well, and you know what? And fair enough, and hats off to you for taking responsibility, because that says a lot for your character. And yeah,
right.
It's I would make sure that all my ducks were in a row, and start looking for inspections, and you're gonna cancel out those bad inspections. Were any of them out of services, or are they just required attentions?
Right. 2 of the logbooks were not on current duty status, and 1 of them I had not logged a break that I had taken, like a 2-hour break, and I was over
okay.
my 11, but I was still under my 14. And he just gave me a warning on that one, but I understand that warnings are almost as many points as an actual citation, right?
Well, they're not as bad. They don't carry the same weight as a conviction, you know, on a citation. But
right.
You know, they are on there. You didn't have any that were out of service, so that's a good sign, because the out of service ones are really going to have a negative impact on you. Are you running under your own authority or a carrier?
No, I'm running for a carrier.
Okay. Yeah, it's, now that CSA 2010's here, we're stuck with it. You know, we really, really have to pay attention to the little details and try and stay off the radar. Have you looked at your carrier score?
No, I haven't.
I would do that.
No.
Log on to the FMCSA's website, and all you need is their DOT number, and pull up their score, and that could be one of the reasons why you're getting inspected.
Right.
If the carrier's on what they deem as kind of a frequent flyer program, they're going to be hammering you. I stopped
right.
in and got an inspection with some of the guys I used to work with, and they were telling me that they grabbed a truck, and this guy had been inspected 6 times in the last 3 days, and he was getting a little
wow.
cranky. But you know, a less than stellar carrier, and you know, every inspection resulted in violations. And I mean, face it, you know, if you're a fisherman, what end of the lake do you fish in? Do you fish in the lake that end of the lake that's got all the fish?
Right. Yeah.
So I would have a look at that, and just, you know, that might answer some of the questions.
Well, really, none of the inspections were targeted at me.
Oh, okay. Just kind of the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right. They were inspecting in Indiana, and I just happened to hit the scales along with 15 other people, had a leaking wheel seal on the trailer, and bam, I got pulled in, you know.
Yeah.
But they were already doing inspections. It's not like they specifically hunted me out. Now I have another question.
Yep, go ahead.
So can you just pull into a scale and ask them to do a level 1?
You betcha.
And if you ask them to do a level 1, you know, what if you get a cranky guy and he decides to go through the whole thing, breaks in the whole deal, you know what I mean?
Well, they're, you know, you go in and ask for an inspection, you know, they're gonna do a thorough inspection on you.
Right.
What I always, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but, you know, my take on that was, you know, here's somebody that's trying to comply and is making the effort to come in for an inspection. So I tended to be a little more lenient and a little more forgiving on my inspections, you know, within reason. You know, if you had a leaking glad hand, well, I'm going to go back and have a look at these traders at these trailer lights. So why don't you make that air leak go away while I'm back doing my thing, and we'll carry on the inspection here in a couple of minutes, or I have to go make a phone call. I'll be right back.
Yeah, I understand. Okay,
so,
I sure appreciate it.
No problem at all. And yeah, 99% of the guys out there that are in the scales or on the side of the highway, you know, they're really not the bad guys. And if you go up and stop in, say, hey, I'd really like an inspection. You're doing inspections today. I looked at it. I had to, my agency required me to do 120 inspections a year. So that was just one less I had to go find.
Right. All right, I'll get off here and let you get somebody else. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much for calling, and let's go to 4567, and you are live and on the show. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Well, not bad. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm doing all right after a long day of meetings. Yeah, we had all our Hazwoper meeting and our driver meeting today.
Oh, okay.
And one of the things that was brought up today, I actually have two questions too, but the first one was on speeding on your logs.
Yes.
Is there a federal government limit on that or not?
Well, I looked at it two ways. You know, if I caught you speeding in your logbook, then you either are speeding or you're falsifying your logbook.
Right. Now,
pick one.
I guess the question was today, you know, we just log pretty much with the speed limit. What I did, that's what it is. But I guess, yes, some guys that go way over, they are falsifying it. But say I'm in a state that has 70-mile-an-hour speed zone. My boss wanted to say today, he's not sure, but he can't find it, but he thinks that there's a federal law that you can't be averaging 65, 68 mile an hour, that there would be a law that, you know, it's set at 60. Is that true or not?
You know, there's nothing on the books that says you couldn't average that speed. Now, having said that, you know, there's no way you can average that speed. And I, you know, for an example, I used to hammer guys all the time that were averaging a set speed between two points. Well, I've driven that road, and I know there is no possible way to do that. And in my court briefs, you know, I would list every traffic light, every 40-mile-an-hour corner, grades on hills, you know, speeds through towns, you know, how many towns you had to go through. You know, it's impossible to average that speed, so I never lost a trial.
That is, well, yeah, you do hold a good point there.
I guess what I, you know, I, earlier on in my career, because the carrier I'm leased to just does not tolerate creativity at all in a logbook, you know, I was no different than anybody else. I got creative, but I didn't get greedy. And I guess, you know, if you want to stretch the truth a little bit, be real, you know, be reasonable. Don't, you know, there is no way that you can average 75 miles an hour for 10 hours and drive 750 miles. Ain't going to happen.
No, it's not.
And yeah. I've called bullshit to that numerous times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a guy's just got to be reasonable. And you know what? You're signing a document that says that it's a true and accurate depiction of your day. So you got to ask yourself if that is a true and accurate depiction of your day or just how creative you are.
Yeah.
And you know what? We've become a Sumi society. There's a lawyer starving to death on every street corner. And, you know, if you're stretching things to the limit all the time, you know, it's sooner or later you're going to get caught.
That's very true. But the route I'm about to take is that's going to change anyways because it'll all be computer. I'm not too impressed with it, but I'll adjust to it.
Well, you know what? And that's you're right. And it's I would say, and this is my own prediction going out on a limb, but if I had to look in a crystal ball, 2 years we're all going to be on electronic logs.
I think you're absolutely right.
There's just no way that Crash and Pat and Public Citizen and Ned and the Knights of Columbus and everybody else that's taken us to court are going to be happy until we're on electronic logs. And I think the FMCSA is going to make a compromise and say, all right, we can. Personally, I think the hours are going to stay pretty close to what we've got. And again, that's just my own thinking. And it's going to be a trade-off. We'll keep this, but the industry is going to have to give us electronic logs.
Yeah, that sounds about right. From what I've been hearing anyways, yeah. That's probably where
that. You know, and a certain segment of the carrier that I'm leased to has gone to electronic logs, and there've been some some negative aspects to it. You know, they've had to adjust some switch points, but there's been a lot of positive aspects to it too, because now the carrier realizes, boy, you know, these guys were doing a lot of stuff for free, so. Their checks were adjusted, you know, a little bit, which is a start. And
right.
Some of the drivers actually found that they gained time, you know, just because it's right to the second. So instead of, you know, losing 5 minutes, you know, 5 or 8 minutes on a 15-minute line, you know, you do that 3 or 4 times in a day, and, you know, you've got an extra 45 minutes of driving. Spread that out over 5 days, and some of the guys found an extra hour and a half in their week.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's, you know, I've been driving for a while, and I'm a creature of habit, and am I real excited about it? No, I kind of like the way things are right now, but it's not the end of the world, and it's going to take some adjustments, but yeah, it's no point stamping our feet and standing in the corner crying. It's just going to be a fact of life, and we can either adapt and overcome or we can fold.
That's true. The other question I had was on my hazmat license.
Yes.
Okay. I did this fingerprinting. I did the whole background, whole 9 yards 4 years ago. Do I have to go through the whole stinking thing again to renew it, or not?
Yeah, no, I think they're gonna want to get their money's worth out of that.
Well, what? I don't get.
I
did it once.
You're not looking for an argument, are you?
No, I was. I don't know. I got the letter in the mail and I was shocked. It was like, what in the world? Then I brought it up today. One claimed you just got to do the fingerprinting. The other one's saying you got to do the whole 9 yards. So I was kind of wondering which one is it then.
Well, you're definitely going to do the fingerprinting again because they're going to want to make your hand black. And you're right. It is just absolutely ludicrous. For me, I've got a fast card because I crossed the border, and I've got a Twic card because I go into the ports. Well, both cards are issued by the same agency, and yet I have to pay two different fees, and it's two different checks.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's all about.
You know, we're from the government, and we're here to help.
Yeah. I guess.
You know, and that's And that's, you know, I just don't understand, and somebody way smarter than me makes these rules, but, you know, why can't we have one card that, you know, covers it all? Because you've gone through the background check for, you know, if you cross the border, you've gone through the background check, you've been fingerprinted for your fast card. Why isn't that good enough to get you into a port? Or if you've got the TWIC card and you're applying for your hazmat endorsement, you've already been fingerprinted and background checked. You know, why can't we waive that and just carry on to the next step?
That's what I figured they would do. I mean, I was, like I said, I was just totally kind of blown away by that they're going to make me do this every 4 years now.
Yep, that's the government way, and it's these stupid TWIC cards. I'm not sure how that's going to go, because my TWIC card expires the same time my fast card expires. So, yeah, am I going to have to pay two different fees and get fingerprinted by the same agency in two different offices? I wish somebody could explain that to me.
Yeah, definitely. I don't go across border. I do have a passport, but that's it. But I guess that doesn't get me over there with a commercial vehicle anymore.
No, they've changed that. You gotta have your fast card now.
Just a passport book, or do you have to have something else?
Well, if you're hauling hazmat, you are required to have a fast card.
Fast card, okay.
And
I just wondered about.
Yeah.
Because this other route I'm about to take, I do think they do go into Canada some. So.
Well, and you know what? It's not bad trucking up there. It's, getting across the border isn't a big deal. Paperwork. You know, as long as you've got everything organized, you know, you breeze through the border, either direction. It's not a big deal crossing it at all.
Right. Sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you very much for jumping into the conversation, and we're going to move along. I'll just give out that number again. If you're listening online, give us a call at 347-884-8327. And if you're online holding, just push 1 and I'll get to your calls. If we've already chatted and you could just push 1 again, and that'll take you out of the queue. And we are going to go to 8013. Good evening. You're live on the show. 8013, you're on. Eight zero one three, going once, going twice. Okay, well we'll try that again in a little bit. Just to reiterate tonight's theme on hazmat transportation. So very important to pay attention to the little details. I'll just relate one horror story that I had the opportunity to participate in. I was on my way to one of our satellite offices to teach a course. And, it's a nice, bright, sunny day in July, not a cloud in the sky. And I'm following a truck, and I've got to turn on my wipers. So I thought that was kind of strange. So the liquid that was on my windshield was kind of smearing my window, so I thought we better have a talk with the driver, so I lit him up and got him stopped. And it's a oil well servicing truck, and this is all this guy does, is drive from well site to well site and do whatever they do. So I got him stopped, and there's a liquid running out of the side of the trailer. So he's all in a panic. So I grabbed all his paperwork, and he opens his trailer up, and there's a considerable amount of liquid in the bottom of this trailer. So I'm looking at the containers that are inside the trailer, and I'm having a look at the paperwork, and the quantities don't match. You know, he's showing 5,000 gallons of acid, and I'm looking at the container, and boy, there's lucky if there's 800 gallons left in there. So my next question to the driver is, what's leaking out of the trailer? Well, he doesn't know. And because his paperwork is so far out of whack, it's anybody's guess. So no point in me being there all by myself, so we've got a hazardous material spill. I call the fire department out. Well, they show up, and they have no idea what this liquid is either. The driver can't tell us. There's liquid on the road. We closed the highway. We got the maintenance contractor to come out with a front-end loader and a couple of truckloads of sand to build a dike. We weren't too far, you know, about 20 minutes, half an hour away from this carrier's office. They sent out a lab tech, analyzed the liquid, and it turns out it was canola oil that they used to flush the lines, and the driver was just too big a hurry to get off to the next job, didn't have a vac truck come and suck the sump out of the trailer. So by the time the dust settled and the fire department sent their bill, and our department went in and did an on-site investigation, it was about a $35,000 bill just because the driver was being lazy and not paying attention to details. So if you're hauling hazmat freight, know what you've got and stay on top of what you got. One little trick I do is truck stops all have a hazmat guide that's available. J.J. Keller prints it. Excellent little book. When I've got a load of hazmat freight, I just take the take my bill of lading, look up what I've got, verify that the placards are correct, the UN number is right, and I just stick my bills in that book on that page. So when I'm called in for an inspection, I'm smarter than the guy that's looking at the paperwork. And that shows him that I'm paying attention to the details. And with any luck, I get out of there with a little better inspection. One thing to remember when you are hauling hazmat freight, all of these inspectors have to do a certain amount of inspections of hazmat loads. My jurisdiction, well, the CVSA standards, we had to do 8 hazmat loads a year to stay accredited. And again, my jurisdiction wanted us to look at 32 hazmat loads a year minimum just to stay current. And so, yeah, you want to make sure that when you got placards on the truck, all your ducks in a row, everything's up to speed, because you've got a way better chance getting inspected. Again, for those of you who are online and joining us, give us a call at 347-884-8327. Push 1, jump into the conversation, and we'll take your calls and answer your questions. Let's go back and try 8013 again. I can hear an open line. 8013, you are live and on the show.
I believe I hit the wrong button.
Oh, well, hey, we're here.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. Anything I can help you out
with? No, I do have a quick question. I used to have hazmat endorsement on my license. I got rid of it because I now haul groceries for one particular company from the warehouse to the grocery store, multiple stores. And my question is, even if there's one piece of product that is 5 pounds, 10 pounds, and the little carton has a placarded emblem on it stating flammable or corrosive or whatever, if you are not have the endorsement anymore on your license, technically that one carton cannot be on your truck. Is that correct?
No. Actually, what that falls into is a consumer class commodity. And, you know, for example, you can have a truckload of, say, Roundup for, you know, that we use in the around the garden in springtime for weed control. And if it's in the quart spray bottles, the same as Windex, that's a consumer commodity, and that's not regulated. However, if you had the same product in 500 gallon totes, now it becomes regulated.
Okay, but I guess what I'm asking is, like, say for instance, so you technically, I know what you're saying. But what I'm trying to say is on my manifest, should it show that one product, though, even if it's 5 pounds, 10 pounds, or whatever, and not a black card as requirement?
It doesn't have to because it's a consumer commodity, and it falls outside of the regulation. The carrier I'm leased to, we haul a lot of Walmart freight. And Walmart, for whatever reason, gives us a separate bill of lading for a fire extinguisher. You know, they class that as, you know, in their system as hazmat freight. And, yeah, we get a separate bill of lading, and it's, you know, it's one fire extinguisher, so you don't have anything placarded. But it's, you know, I guess it's just their policy, and that's just what they do. The one chemical that you are going to or could run into that is going to require you to have your hazmat endorsement and placards is swimming pool chemical. I don't know whether it's the chlorine or it's one of the pool chemicals that it's a real small little, you know, basically the size of an ice cream pail, but it's regulated, and we actually haul quite a bit of that to Walmart stores. So I don't know whether you've come across that or not, but normally in, you know, your probably 99% of your freight is going to be, you know, just a consumer commodity and not going to be an issue for you.
Okay, I was just curious about that.
Well, thank you very much for jumping into the call. And, once we've talked, just push one, and we'll get you off the queue. Let's go now to 5769. 5769, good evening, and welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Hey, you just brought up the pool chemicals. My wife cleans pools, and we're on pool cleaning business. What is the chemical? I mean, I know we carry chlorine TAZ, you know, in a 5 gallon bucket of, you know, 40 pound bag of chlorine TAZ, is that hazmat? Do we need to placard our truck to see the hazmat a Ford Ranger and a little pickup?
You know, if it's a regulated commodity, she would. I would check with the supplier that she gets that chemical from, because they're going to be able to tell her whether or not that's a regulated commodity or not. The stuff we haul, they classify it as, I believe it's an organic peroxide.
Okay. So then is it considered hazmat when the general consumer buys it from the store? Don't they have to placard their vehicle and hazmat their vehicle?
No, because they're not a commercial vehicle.
Okay, so us having a little Ford Ranger pickup all around cleaning pools, we're not commercial then either then?
No, you're running a business, so you know, technically that vehicle is a commercial vehicle. Now, it's depending on the state that you're in, it
Arizona.
Might be, I'm not sure what Arizona uses for a weight limit to decide whether or not that's a commercial vehicle that falls in with the regulation.
Would that change at all if we put it all into a little four-bay trailer?
Then
it wouldn't be a commercial truck. It would be a commercial trailer. Can I
well,
bend the rules that way?
Tomato. It's still going to be, you know, it's still going to be a commercial venture.
Okay. But
that's,
you know, that way we have to register the vehicle commercial and all that.
Yeah,
only
well,
the trailer because it's all less expensive to register a trailer.
Is the pickup registered commercially now, or does it just have?
No, it's just registered in her name, and she started cleaning pools in front of our spot. 15 rental homes that had 10 of them had pools, and so she started doing that, and then a bunch of other people said, hey, we have a pool, you clean that, and so, you know, it's just evolved.
That's, now in this day and age with jurisdictions being broke and looking for easy money, I'd look into that and see if that vehicle does require a commercial plate. In my jurisdiction, it would qualify as a commercial vehicle, and it'd have to be registered commercially. And, you know, those are such easy tickets and make it such easy pickings because, you know, all you got to do is run the plate on the computer and it'll tell you how it's registered and whether or not you need to stop it. And, again, we want to avoid getting stopped.
Okay.
That's just a ticket you don't need.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would definitely look into that and save yourself some aggravation down the road.
How do we call in without throwing up our own red flag to ourselves?
Oh, you know what? Just
you know what I'm saying? Because if they call my phone number back, I call hers back, and it's going to answer the pool cleaning service. And
that's giving them way too much credit. No, just phone up and say, hey, I'm in the pool cleaning business. I've got a small Ranger, Ford Ranger pickup. All I'm doing is hauling around, 150 pounds worth of, hand tools and whatever else you got. Do I need commercial license plates? And just call up the DMV and they'll answer that question. Or you know what? You can you might be able to find that online. Go on Arizona's Department of Transportation website. And,
okay.
See if that information's there. But, yeah, give them a call. And
then with the hazmat? With the hazmat, some of the chlorine tabs, how do I find out what quantity of whatever, and how do I call it away?
Okay, whoever is supplying that chemical is going to be able to answer that question for you.
No, they won't. I've already asked. Leslie's Pool Supply does not know. The largest pool company in America. I've asked four of their stores and know them now.
Wow, boy, they're selling it. So, what you can do is have a look at the package and see if there, if there's any information, a contact number or somewhere you can write to them.
Okay.
Yeah, somebody handling that stuff has got to know.
Okay. All right, good deal. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much for calling in, and I'd like to thank everybody for joining me this evening on the show. Always great to spend an hour with everybody. Again, don't forget to tune in half an hour. Kevin and Lisa are live on 171, and Sirius 147. I know they'll be looking forward to taking some calls. And like I say, let's don't forget about them on the Sirius and XM website. Jump on there, fire off a quick email, let them know how much we like the show, and maybe we can get them on a little earlier and a little more time. Like to mentioned to everybody, let's stay safe and stay compliant here. And enjoy your...
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm a guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm working for the state. I'm a highway patrol. Well, you know me when...